When it comes to your sales stack, stop tool hopping and start winning with Nux. Simplify your outbound today at nux.ai/salesgravy. That's nooks.ai/salesgravy.
This is the Sales Gravy Podcast. Hi, I'm Jeb Blunt, best-selling author of Fanatical Prospecting, Objections, Sales EQ, and Inked, and I'm here to help you open more doors, close bigger deals, and rock your commission check.
Welcome back to the Sales Gravy Podcast. I'm Jeb Blunt Jr., your host, and I'm here today with Ashley Blunt, your co-host, and we're doing the best of Q1. I'm really excited for these clips. We've got some really, really great pieces of information that we've shared over the last quarter, and we're going to recap those for you so you get a best of playlist. Ashley, thanks for joining me, and I'm excited for Q2. What do you think?
I'm excited for Q2 as well, and just like kind of skimming through these clips, I'm excited to go over them and kind of almost do a check-in. A lot of it's around goals and the progress and the difficulty of working through them and sticking to them.
As you're listening to this, going into Q2, we have Outbound Conference. Ashley, you want to give people a little bit of information about Outbound?
So Outbound this year is in the beautiful city of Las Vegas, Nevada at the Red Rock Casino Resort. We're super excited for you guys to join us there. We have a fabulous lineup of speakers ready to go, and we hope to see you in November.
Go to outboundconference.com. That's outboundconference.com to go get your tickets. Now let's get into these clips. Putting down your goals. Well, first, it's really hard because it feels sort of vague and it's hard to put exact words to the things that you want. And a lot of people go through this process. Sometimes it's easy to say, well, I want a house or I want a boat or I want to go on a vacation. And a lot of this has to do with like tangible things you could spend money on. Typically, those are all great, but they do run out after, a few brainstorming sessions. You kind of realize that, I guess, as human beings, we want a little bit more than just stuff usually. And going through that process, you talked about it makes you uncomfortable. I think it also exposes your risk. And so in a lot of cases, it's more uncomfortable to write down goals because you realize how difficult it might be to actually reach them. And when we don't write down goals, it is easy to be delusional that, if you have no goals, you'll always hit it. Whatever it is, you're going to, and Zig Ziglar said this, if you don't have direction, you'll get there every single time. And it's the same thing with writing them down. I think putting real words, there's something really powerful about putting ink on paper. It is actually physical, but it's like the manifestation of your thoughts into the physical world. And for whatever reason, that grounds our brains in a way that not many other things can. I mean, it's scientific that people who take notes and who use notepads in meetings and actually write down things remember the information at a much higher percentage than people who don't. And that's even typing and everything. So I think that, what I go through when I write down these goals and as I've been journaling is initial discomfort, initial anxiety. Sometimes I sort of want to talk myself out of stretching myself. Because there's no one watching. It's just you, right? I mean, unless you tell someone what you're doing, but typically you're writing in a journal, you're writing on a piece of paper, or you're, thinking about it on your own, and there's no one else watching, so you sort of can manipulate it in the way that makes it easier to get to. But when you start really challenging yourself, you'll feel that tension between what you really want and what's easiest.
Mm-hmm. No, I love that. And, to add to it, I think, writing it down is a form of accountability. Mm-hmm. And, it's happened to me enough that I'll write something down, I'll get distracted, and 3 months later I come back across it on my desk and I go, oh, I dropped the ball here. But because I've written it down, that form of accountability to tell me, hey, get back on track. Mm-hmm. Keep the train moving. You can get to the final destination, but you've got to stay committed.
That clip right there talks about goal setting, kind of the benefits of doing it, the process of going into your notebook and thinking strategically about the goals that you set. I think it even gets into specificity and some of those things. We are now going into Q2 of 2026. So Ashley, what have you learned about the goal setting process now that you've had a few months to hit some of these goals, and what's been accomplished on your team since we shot that podcast? Mm-hmm.
That's such an exciting question. So one of the biggest wins, I think, is that, we got to have our strategic planning session in Q1. So it really helped set that direction for the next year and just bringing clarity around roles and like how we're actually going to reach those goals. So that was step number one. And I'm excited that we got that one checked off the list because we're already seeing some of the momentum pick up within my team, especially around efficiency and the volume of things that we can handle. So it's awesome to see that come together. And personally, I know I had said something about wanting to compete in another skating competition this year. Checked that one off in mid-March and headed to the next one. So we're going strong on both professional and personal. What about you?
Super exciting to watch what you've been able to accomplish this year. I mean, from a goal-setting perspective, when I shot this, I was in a different role within the organization. So my goals have had to shift and change. What I have really noticed is that the process of setting goals is so important to the success I was experiencing and am experiencing, and even the failures that I'm experiencing. If I don't go through the process the right way, I do actually suffer. And, you know, going into Q2, I've got some really ambitious goals. And because I have a plan and built a plan and went through the goal planning process we talked about in that clip, I am actually seeing some really crazy success happening. Personally, I got on the figure skating train. If you go listen to my Money Monday about that, it should be out. Picked up figure skating this year as a 28-year-old person who's never been on the ice and seeing some really crazy progress there. The one thing I have learned about goals that I'll add into this conversation just for the listeners before we head into our next clip is when you are setting goals, it's important to know that you are going to see a lot of progress in places that you've never tried anything before. And you're not going to see a lot of progress in places that you've been doing the daily motion for years and years and years. For example, for me with like prospecting and for sales and things like that, my skill level, I'm not seeing, you know, 25% change in gains because I've been doing this for so long. So my percentage changes are a lot smaller. Now with figure skating, I've noticed like massive jumps in my skill levels from, you know, being on the ice a couple months ago for the first time to today. So knowing the difference between something you're probably going to need to put intentional effort into every day for like a 0.1% increase in gains is a little less exciting than new skills. So keep that in mind. Building new skills is really, really fun, but you also need to work on the skills that you already have.
So the commitment to the goals, to the growth, that's like the thought that keeps reoccurring to me, and which is why we're seeing the success.
I think that we're both in the same boat this year. And that has been a big motivator for me is love the process and have fun with it. And you're going to win or you're going to lose, but the outcome is not dependent upon, you know, your value and who you are as a human being. You just need to change the process. If the process isn't, you know, bringing you the results you want, go back to the drawing board and just keep learning along the way. All right, let's head into this next clip.
I'm keen to know because you learned golf because your wife was into it. And I don't know about you, but there's no way I could learn off my husband. If he was trying to teach me how to do something, I think I'd kill him. So, you know, maybe you can answer the golf question first here about learning, maybe learning from your wife. But does the same thing apply when you're learning from somebody so close to you? Mm. Is it like, oh, you know, I know, I don't need to know this from you or give me a break.
I know. So if Jeb is listening, Jeb, if you're listening,
I
know the answer is yes, and I don't learn from you because I'm not any different than any other kid. Like, yeah. I mean, I have children. They don't listen to me.
No.
You know? And it's the best that I try. Like, they don't listen to me. And sometimes they do.
Yeah.
So it's not all lost, but like, they do listen to me.
Sometimes they listen.
Sometimes they don't. Most of the time they don't. And I was definitely the same way. And I think that Chip also, I think along with, you know, being a young man in a testosterone-driven industry, drove me to have a big ego and a big pride. I think more ego, like less ego, more pride. In that, like when he tried to tell me things or teach me things, or, you know, he was just talking like we were on this podcast, you know, I would roll my eyes, and like behind the scenes, it just was not as smooth of learning. Now, the issue is that like I learned everything from him. So like in the end, I did learn all of those things from him. I had all those conversations, whether or not I wanted to listen, the knowledge went in my head, and I would, you know, be like 2 days later and go like, I should probably try that, you know, whatever. But I would grumble about it, and it would work and that kind of thing. Now, was I as receptive to the learning, and did I learn as much as I could have? No, I didn't. And I'm still working through that. Like, I'm still understanding how to sort of get over that kind of child father like thing. And I work, when I work with sales clients, like it's the same in industries, like VP of sales training their sales team. I call it the parent effect. You know, like we come in and say the same thing that their VP of sales has been preaching on the mountaintop for years. And suddenly they're like, that's a good idea.
You know? Because you said it, not them.
Yeah.
So I use the exact same analogy. So that's why I'm smiling, because it's so true. But do you know what? So then I call the next bit that I'm the fun aunt. Mm. So I'm fun Aunt Harriet. And I come in and I say all the things that your parents told you, you know, don't do this, do this. But I say it from the fun aunt way, and therefore they're like, yes, everything you say. And so that's how I always describe that. You go into a sales team and, you know, the VPs or the head of is then saying, oh, I just need them to do this. And then you go in, say it in a different word, in a different style, in a different way, different person, and you're in.
Outside of that family specific dynamic where I talked about what it's like to learn from you and you learning from me and, you know, me learning from Jeb, and of course we're in a family business scenario where that obviously isn't relevant to a lot of people listening to the podcast, but I think there's a lesson there for sales leaders. And, you know, when we work with sales teams all over the world, we experience some level of this. You leading our training department and operations, you have hands in almost all of our, you know, best customers' engagements. What is one thing you've noticed about the learning from someone close to you challenge that sometimes is pervasive in sales organizations?
This is a weird way to put it, but it almost becomes noise when it's the same, when it's the leader and it's the right message and it's the correct way to coach and you're giving all of the resources to your teams. Sometimes it just takes a different voice saying it in a little bit different way and you see a massive amount of improvement. And, you know, I'll tie it back to skating. I would do that periodically with coaches. Like, I was responding, I was winning, I was moving up, but that didn't mean my technique was perfect. And sometimes it just takes hearing it from someone else. And sales organizations that we work with, and, you know, even in the consulting and things that we do, a lot of times we see success when there's just that another voice in the room that's helping reiterate the message that the leader is sharing with their team and reinforcing it.
I call it like I'm the cool uncle or cool cousin when I come into the room. When
you get to be the rock star.
Right. It's somewhat, I think, frustrating for leaders both before and after the event, but eye-opening for them when they bring someone like me in. The difference I see in a lot of places is the way that I go about saying it, the way that we teach it, how we build our curriculum and our emphasis on speaking the language of our customers. It has an immense amount of value. And, you know, leaders, especially after like fanatical prospecting, like one of the things that we focus on is building pipeline fast in that curriculum. Like, I've been telling these guys to do the same thing for, you know, 3 years and they've never been able to do it. And after you came in, you know, 90 days later, we had more pipeline. And in some cases, it genuinely is like you need a separate voice. And then your messaging starts to really click afterwards.
And, you know, it's just bringing the whole team together. So they're all playing well together as well. Right.
Right.
So I think that's a big part of it. I was thinking back of when I was on the soccer team and sometimes we'd get a little disjointed and it would just take another coach coming over and saying, hey, y'all are doing the right thing and reinforcing it and just being that authority and saying, but you can get more out of this. Yeah. And you enable them to get more out of it.
That is an interesting conversation. You know, how you learn from others that are close to you. And if you are listening to this and you're a seller, think about your relationship with your managers. Think about the relationship with the people who are mentors and coaches with you. Are you really listening? Or are you waiting for someone else to come and bring that voice? Now, I think that's, you know, having multiple people and having different kinds of organizations to help you with your sales growth and, you know, mindset and all of that is really important. But sometimes this is about being aware.
Sometimes I think this is important to not, you just don't want to hear it from the person close to you. You already have the self-awareness that you need to make an improvement or that you need to do better because you're slacking, and it just emotionally hurts a little more because the person's pointing it out.
Yeah, usually when you're angry at someone pointing something out for you, you already know you need to make that change. You're just mad that someone else said it and, you know, you're being held accountable for it. All right, let's go into our next clip.
When you think about selling, think about blending and think about from your standpoint, there isn't one way of having conversations with people. There are multiple ways to have conversations with people and you have to make these decisions in the moment based on the context and based on the person that you're dealing with. What is the channel that's going to give you the highest probability of acquiring or gaining or getting to your desired outcome at the lowest cost of time, energy, and money? In some cases, getting on an airplane and going and seeing someone is going to be the thing that you need to do in order to get a big deal close. And in other cases, on a first time appointment, it might be a phone call or it might be a video call. And I would tell you that even though I wrote the book Virtual Selling, I think the world has moved way too video centric. And even now as an executive, I'm often saying, can we just get on a phone call? Because I don't want to have to go get on a video. I could just have a conversation with you in the moment. So those are the choices that we have to make. And by the way, as a Gen Z, your natural inclination almost always is to go digital. So you're almost always thinking, I'm going to send an email, I'm going to send a text. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But again, go back and think, what's the communication channel that's going to get me the outcome that I desire? Because that's the only question that matters. If a text message is going to get you there, send a text message. But if a phone call is going to get you there, make a phone call. If getting there in person is going to get you what you want, get there in person. If I start with like the biggest mistakes that salespeople make, and by the way, this isn't a Gen Z problem. This is a Gen X problem. This is a baby boomer problem, is that salespeople get single siloed. I'm only good at this. So if I go back to my generation of sellers said, hey, I'm only good in person. Like, so you would say, you know, pick up the phone and call someone. And that was the fastest way to make someone quit selling, is here, put a phone in front of them. But the truth is that getting out in person was incredibly inefficient. Now, it's super effective. Like, if you're standing in front of someone, you can close business, you can build relationships, you can get people to engage at a level that you can't on any other medium, but it's inefficient in terms of time. But salespeople would say, I'm only good in person. You have salespeople that they say, I'm only good on video, or I'm only good on the phone, or I'm only good at email, or I'm only good at text messaging. That's a mistake. You need to be good at everything. And so if you get into this mindset that I'm only good at some things, that mindset is limiting your ability to make money because it's limiting your ability to communicate with people.
I feel like this is totally in your wheelhouse because you're absolutely doing this right now. As everybody knows, all of our sales trainers here sell. So in blending of messaging and getting to where you need to go the quickest, what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, he said about everything you can say about picking the right communication channel for different folks. It's hard to nail down exactly what the right move is because every single person speaks a little differently. So we sort of blanket statement, you need to pick the right thing for the right people. The way that you can express this practically, so just some quick tips for you as a seller, is in a lot of cases, I have to feel out the kind of communicator that my prospect or partner is in that scenario. So in some cases, I'm working with another person who's Gen Z, early or younger millennial, and I see a lot of people moving towards like, I'm okay with a phone call. I'm okay with a text message. And I love that there's a lot more people who are communicating in that way, but there are buyers and prospects who are, older, more seasoned, they have different backgrounds, different frame of references. I like to prioritize based on how valuable this motion is in terms of the deal itself, in terms of my productivity. You know, for example, setting up a bunch of video calls back to back to back to back in your afternoon isn't very successful for your organization. Like if your goal is to treat every customer with the level of expertise and value that you want to bring, and you only set up video calls, you're probably missing out on key information or how people communicate, or you're not putting in your CRM directly, you're not organizing your day, and it can be very onerous. And then afterwards, you feel like you're exhausted because you've been on videos for like 5 hours. Now, three of those people, if you'd asked them how they like to communicate, might have said something very different. So In most of my meetings, after I get through like a first time appointment, so say I set up a meeting. Now, you can pick the right channel for prospecting. I mean, I think there's lots to be said on that. But after my first time appointment, one of the questions I ask people is, how do you prefer a quick communication? Do you prefer text, email, phone call? Do you prefer meetings over video? And usually they'll tell you, oh yeah, you can text me, or I actually prefer email. I see things, don't text me. I don't get to that. People are pretty honest about how they communicate. And the people who tell me text messages, we text, every other day because that's how they communicate. People who like email, very different cadence. It's a very normal professional cadence. I work with these companies that are more in the field. They're not sitting in an office with a Patagonia vest. They're out in their trucks with bibs on, and they're walking into manufacturing plants. If they're in that motion, they would prefer phone calls and they want to move pretty quickly. They don't have an office to just sit and have a video call with me on. And me forcing them to do so is friction in our relationship. So rather than fighting it and trying to get them to do what I want them to do, I can kind of meet them in the middle And therefore, they have a more positive relationship in their minds with me as a salesperson. So picking the right channel just often comes down to good communication. Ask people what they want to do.
Awesome. That was great. Well, I think that moves well into our next clip.
What skills you need to build in cold calling in order to get through. So skill number one is the ability to leave voice messages. And there's voice messages you're going to leave on the phone. And there's also voice messages that you're going to end up leaving on, say, LinkedIn. So you need to learn how to leave an effective voice message on LinkedIn, effective voice message on the phone. And that's going to be super important because in a lot of cases, not only people are going to hear your voice message, they're going to read your voice message. The second thing is sequencing. So you need to get really good at being able to leverage a cold call, which might turn into a voice message, which might turn into a reminder via InMail or a LinkedIn direct mail, which also might be a email, which could also be a text message, or could be you landing on your prospect's social media post and commenting on it. It could even go into snail mail. So what happens is if you're like sending one email out there, you're just a drop in the ocean. But if you leave with a phone call and you leave a voice message, you're a real human being. If you then follow up with an email and you mention the voice message that you left, you're a real human being. And then if you do something on LinkedIn, and I love reminders on LinkedIn, hey, I left you a voicemail. And if, by the way, if you're a field salesperson, you can have a reminder, hey, I came by your office and I dropped something at the front desk for you. So you can use that. But you want to start sequencing and pulling those messages together. You can see right here, I've got this brand new book, The LinkedIn Edge. In the book itself, there's a whole process on how to sequence those things together. But the sequencing, along with being able to leave good messages, will get you through. Because I do look at voicemail messages. When I say look, if you hear my words, I actually read them. I don't really listen to voicemail messages so much anymore. And I get voicemail messages both via email and on my telephone. So I get those. The third thing is you're going to have to start practicing and getting through AI gatekeepers. So AI gatekeepers are really coming online now. They're not prevalent, but they're there. And those gatekeepers, just like email gatekeepers, just like human gatekeepers, there's a process for getting through. And what you want to start thinking about is relevance. And Will and I have talked about relevance a million times before, but with an AI gatekeeper, all they're looking for is relevance. There's going to be different types of them. So there's going to be some that are going to be set up on phone systems, Siri. So they're just looking for relevance. And that relevance means that whatever comes out of your mouth on the cold call has got to be about your prospect or about problems that they're facing right now, which means that, and I'm going to give you number four, bonus, you need to know who you're calling. You need to have some business acumen. And you need to be able to use words and language and problems and challenges and issues and aspirations and business outcomes. You need to be able to say the things that are important to them. And the crap that's not getting through right now is this gratuitous AI sycophantic crap. You know, oh, Jeb, love what you're doing over at blah, blah, blah. I get them a dozen a day. Or, hey, I'm with blah, 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 blah. We help companies do blah, 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 blah. You just sound like everybody else. So you really want to dial into the relevance of your message.
You know, we were just talking about preferred method of communication. And, you know, in this clip, Jeb's talking about, you know, the best types of voicemails to leave on various platforms and going into sequencing. And I feel like you are the king of sequencing because internally, you're like a legend for how you've explained this and built. So I'd love you to take this on.
All right. So voicemails, like you talked about the fundamental skill of voicemail. So voicemail in and of itself, really, really powerful. It takes up a little bit more time when you're prospecting. I want to give another fundamental skill of prospecting that leads into this conversation. So the first fundamental skill of prospecting is organization. Do you have lists that funnel into a targeted prospecting block that you are specifically talking to a kind of ICP, a buyer type, a geographical area? Are you setting appointments? What is your intention behind it? Most reps I work with fail when they build a bunch of sequences like Jeb's talking about and find the right communication channels that they want to use, and then they just upload a Zoom info list of cold prospects and then let it loose. It's just not the way that you should be going about your prioritization. So if you are funneling people based on your qualifying blocks, where I literally call a group of cold VPs of sales out of a list and I ask the silliest questions, like, do you have a sales team? How many people are on your sales team? Have you thought about bringing in an outside vendor for sales training this year or in the last few years? If they say yes or no to those questions, I then move them into different places. And when they get to a targeted list, then I'm putting them into sequencing. And so to Jeb's point, a fundamental skill of prospecting is voicemails. Voicemails should be very simple. It's essentially what you would say on the phone, but you're kind of converting it into a voicemail block. Now, I don't leave voicemails on every single call I make, but if I can get to the right person's phone number and get to their voicemail block, there's no reason I shouldn't. I'm not leaving a voice message to, you know, a random phone number I pull off of Zoom Info from a cold list that you can't even confirm that it's their name. That's, you know, like, I don't know that that's the person who's doing that. But if I have a list of 25 people that I have been cultivating for, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks, and I have been moving them into my targeted lists, and I have a pretty good idea that this is an account that I could go win, I'm absolutely leaving voicemails. And so in my prospecting block, you can actually see, like, I'm going to put this in the camera. Hopefully y'all can see this on YouTube. I actually count how many voicemails and things I leave, and I note that in my CRM so that the next time I have a communication with them, I know that there is something that is in somewhere in their world that they've seen my name, heard Sales Gravy, heard why I was calling. And it's all about familiarity. So if you're not leaving voicemails, or you're not setting yourself up for that skill, if you're just calling and if you don't get anything and you just hang up the phone and just keep rolling, you're missing just a really important part of, honestly, it's a little bit marketing. Like, you're missing out on the opportunity to put your name and your company in front of that person, so that the next time you communicate with them, they've at least seen it.
Absolutely agree. And I've enjoyed watching all this too. And another question that you use while you're qualifying, which I think is really great, is the way that you approach people and ask, what are their initiatives for the year? Do you have any projects you're currently working on? Like, I think the qualifying is super important, what you're doing too, because yeah, you are weeding out the contacts that aren't really contacts that need to be in there. And it makes the sequencing much more manageable.
The one thing I get a question about is gatekeepers. Do you leave a message with a gatekeeper, or do you let them send you to the voicemail? And one thing I do, this is a skill of ultra high performers, is being able to pivot on a prospecting call and ask for qualifying information, even if you don't have the right person on the phone. If I get a gatekeeper and they go, well, I can send you to so-and-so's voicemail, would you like that? I'm going to start with, yes, I would love to be sent to their voicemail. But before you send me to their voicemail and get me into their inbox, I don't want to waste their time. And I don't want to waste your time either. Could you answer a quick question for me? Yes. Do you have a sales team? And the gatekeeper goes, yes or no. And if they say yes, I go, great. How many folks would you estimate is on the sales team? They say, you know, 25 plus. Great. We're in the ballgame. Yep. Send me through the voicemail. If they're like, yeah, we have got two reps and they're in Australia, I go, great. I really appreciate you answering that question for me. I don't want to waste so-and-so's time. I've got their email here. I'll send some information. And if there's interest, we'll go from there. And then I just move on with my prospecting. Like, I'm qualifying everything before I even get to the voicemail. So a quick tip there is just, before I waste their time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you have somebody on the phone.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm excited to get into this next clip. It's with Jeb and Patrick Lencioni and Around the Working Geniuses. So let's dive in.
Because you need all six types. That's the beautiful thing about this. You need all six types of work. And when teams say, oh, I don't really like working with WIs, they're so flaky, it's like, then you're not going to make it. Oh, these ETs are so anal, they just want to get stuff done on budget. It's like, yeah, and that's, we need them all. And that's one of the things I love about this. It allows us to appreciate everyone because they're all geniuses.
I got so frustrated because we have this big conference that we run every year called the Outbound Conference. Go to outboundconference.com and get your tickets. And the ETs on my team, I'm starting to run early promotions, and I'm just coming out with marketing stuff and doing it on my own. And all the ETs, even one that's sitting over here, got all up in arms and jumped down my throat, and we're all upset, and I'm just like, I'm just going. Like, we're just moving forward. And because they're like, we need to have the budget and the prices right, and we have to do all these things.
And you can say, oh, you're doing that because that's how you're wired, and I appreciate that. You can also say, we do have to lean into the fact that the reason why Sales Gravy has done well is because we're an idea company and we move on things. So I am not going to make you, I'm not going to hold you accountable for perfect execution when I'm out doing this, but I appreciate that you're pushing back on me because we need the balance. Yes. But you can say, I think we need to err on the side of ideas versus safety.
Yes.
But I love the fact that we've got some safety people in here. And most people, when they know they've been heard and seen, they can do that.
And it's true on sales teams. The salespeople are always complaining because there are people in the organization holding them back. The internal sell is harder than the external sell. And when I'm with sales teams, I say the same thing every single time. I said, if you didn't have the safety people on the team, you would burn the place to the ground.
Yes. Yes. And if you didn't have the other people, you'd have a perfect system with no new thoughts and ideas exactly. that drew people in. And that's what I wanted. I want the ETs to go, I'm so glad you're a WD because, man, I couldn't do that. I want you to go, I'm so glad you're an ET because I couldn't do that. That's the difference between people resenting one another and celebrating one another. And it's the difference between failure and success, too.
All right, so huge shout out to Patrick Lencioni and that entire team over there who has helped our organization immensely as on someone on the sales side, someone who, you know, has more experience with a very particular type of individual within a business. You know, sales is one of those places where we all sort of know personality types just because it's the nature of the beast. But then you have all of these other people in the organization that work with you. And if you are completely ignorant to other kinds of working geniuses, especially if your buyers are not salespeople, which I have the benefit of, you know, of working with sales professionals and sales leaders all the time. So we have a very like easy relationship where I can, we speak the same language in a lot of cases, but if you're a buyer, like I sold to CFOs in Gwinnett County when I was 22 years old, and I am a completely like high energy, you know, galvanizer. I believe that my working genius types would never put me in the space where I was writing like big Excel worksheets and finishing out like minute technical projects for
people.
The more
tenacious.
I don't like speak that language. And when I was selling to these CFOs who are definitely different working geniuses and DISC profiles than myself, I was at a big disadvantage comparatively to other people who were selling to them who had, you know, who had learned those personality types. You as someone who runs a business and has lots of different people on your team and you work with lots of clients, the importance of this conversation for sales leaders or even just sales professionals who are interested in knowledge that's not necessarily directly related to the revenue producing part of your job.
Oh my gosh, it's so important. And you know, when we were reading the Working Genius book as a team, it was just like light bulbs going off all over the place. And it's probably been about a year now since we actually read that book. But now that we've kept going back to it and we've kept pushing it through our organization, I've seen it transform projects on the delivery side because we're getting the right people in the correct seats to pull this work off. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that goals, we were hitting a higher efficiency in goals, and that's because we're moving the players around where we need them. And it's based off their working geniuses. And I also have an appreciation now that when we're working cross-departmentally, this literally happened like last week, there's a handful of us in our organization that are inventors. There's literally like three of us. That is one of our primary working geniuses. And I was able to sit at the table with that other individual and recognize him doing what I do. So it's also fun to see how that, you know, people with similar geniuses work through, but also why it's important to have them jump in the right part of the conversation. Because it's also just as much what you're saying about communication. You can eliminate a lot of communication frustration if you understand where the other individual is coming from, if they're doing work that they're passionate about, if they're not doing work that falls within their working genius. They're not going to be happy. You know, we've seen that too, which is why we've made the adjustments where we've needed to for tasks on my team. Just because you might have the same job title doesn't necessarily mean that you're doing the exact same part of the process. Some of our processes are divided up now because of people's working geniuses. So it's really cool to watch the team operate on that level. And it also enables like the rest of our trainers and our sales team to go out and actually bring more back to us because we can handle it and we can deliver it at the level that we want our clients to have. So
relating this into the sales org, so you know, it is important for you to understand that working within an organization, but a lot more organizations are focused on, you know, their enterprise selling teams, team selling specifically. And this has been a big push for lots of organizations over the last like 4 years. I've seen a lot more of this, and it has to do with these bigger projects. Like I have some enterprise level deals at SalesGravy that I'm working currently, and you know, we're going through this process all together. But if I was working it all alone, because of my working genius, I tend to fall short on a lot of the important parts of the process. But later down the road, not immediately, not up front, but I start to get out of my element when it requires a lot of technical follow through or a big, you know, piece of information that you have to do a lot of work to go gather all of that from, and finding different subject matter experts within my business who are going to help me out with this. I don't have not the skill set, but just the working genius to drive that at an excellent level. So what I have to do and what I work with sales teams on is making sure that you understand your working geniuses across your enterprise sales team, whether that's engineers, the subject matter experts, whether that's your lead seller and account executives, whether that's managers, whoever that is, and then go ahead and game planning where they're going to be in the process. It helps a lot. As someone who is more of a galvanizer, and I think I have an inventor as well, my working genius profile, I know that when it comes to tenacity, I'm going to need to pull somebody in on my account management team who has a way better eye for making sure that little details get pushed across the line. So I'll bring that person in and say, this is what role I want you to play in this. This is how we're going to lead it. You're going to be a part of this with me from end to end. And then I have people who are experts on things, but aren't necessarily skilled at the managing of a calendar or you know, how to follow through on making sure that meetings get put in front of one another and making sure emails go back and forth at the right times. I can do that. But if I'm bringing that subject matter expert in, I need to know that about them, because if they come in and be a subject matter expert, but I'm expecting them to take the deal from it, yeah, start like running with it more with more responsibility, I'm setting them and myself up for failure. So these working genius conversations, especially that one with Patrick Lencioni, can help you as a leader and even as an individual just start to see the web a little bit. It's like watching the Matrix and starting to put the pieces in place for success.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's what led to part of the push to actually change how our account management team is working with our trainers. And it's been incredible to watch just everybody absolutely thrive with the changes based on that. And, you know, to your point, like bringing that subject matter expert in, if they don't have the tenacity to take everything across the finish line, then you need to make sure that the person on your team that does is also paired with them. And that's where that team selling is so incredibly important, because that's how you get it across the finish line. That's how you get more of those enterprise. That's how you sell more. Yeah. So working together with the team and pulling on the working geniuses.
No, just really good clips here. I appreciate you joining me for this podcast. As we go into this Q2, I want you to take a look at SalesGravy University. For you and your team, it's a great place for resources around sales training. Over 55 experts we've handpicked for that site and over 1,700 hours of on-demand sales training content. If you're interested in that, go to salesgravy.com and let us know, and we'd be happy to set up a conversation with you. If you are listening to this and you've gotten this far on the podcast, you need to give us 5 stars. And that would be on Spotify, Apple, or iHeart, wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you aren't watching this, go to youtube.com/salesgravy, ring the bell, and you can watch all of these conversations. Ashley, it was wonderful having you here today in the Sales Gravy Studios for the Sales Gravy Podcast. We'll catch you next time. Nooks brings prospecting, emailing, and parallel dialing into one single workflow. Their AI agents handle the busy work so your reps can focus on what matters, live conversations. Stop wasting up to 80% of the day stitching tools together and start hitting your numbers with Nooks. Go to nooks.ai to see how artificial intelligence plus human intelligence equals more pipeline. That's nooks.ai, N-O-O-K-S.ai.